You are listening to the Plastic Surgery Revolution with Dr. Stephen Davis, the one and only podcast that discusses modern plastic surgery and leaves you looking great and feeling better.
Hi, and welcome to the Plastic Surgery Revolution. I'm your host, Dr. Stephen Davis, and today I happen to have a very special guest with me. This is Dr. Peter Schmid. He is an internationally known plastic surgeon and a professional sculptor. He is teaching physicians the art and science behind sculpting and how they can use that in their aesthetic practice. He is in private practice in Longmont, Colorado, and he happens to be a very good friend of mine. So we're going to get into a couple of things and just talk about how art helps him be an unbelievable plastic surgeon and how he has this unbelievable desire to train others in seeing the body and using art to help them in aesthetic surgeries. Hi, Peter.
Hello.
Let me ask you a couple of quick questions. How did you get started in becoming such an unbelievable sculptor? Because I know you did a lot of that even before going in medical school and things like that.
Right. Yeah, I would say art was a passion of mine since childhood. And it began when I picked up a pencil and my mother directed me through her interest in art to discover the world around me. My father was an inspiration. He was a family physician. And there was always this dichotomy struggle of taking the pencil out of the hand and putting the baseball mitt in the hand.
Right.
Versus going on in drawing and exploring. And it was a real discovery process for me as a child. Because as a child, your eyes and heart are open to the world. You're very pure. And it was a way to absorb what I saw in the environment, what was around me.
That's really beautiful. When did you figure out that you had a real, like, talent for this?
I think my talent was discovered by others. As I drew and painted, I was encouraged to enter my art into a county fair.
Oh.
And then that's where things kind of took off. I've got a little bit of public exposure at that time. I did very, very well.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got my first commission at the age of 11.
Get out of here.
No,
really?
When someone from Boulder came and saw a picture, actually a watercolor, and said, I want that. And the difficult thing is separating from something you produce. So I produced a copy of it, which was a real challenge for me because it took my sense of freedom and I had to focus it and then reduplicate what came from immediate spontaneity in the heart.
Beautiful. Unbelievable. So when you become a plastic surgeon and going through all the years of training that it takes to become a plastic surgeon, how have you developed this very, very special course called Sculpting for Surgeons? How have you develop this in a way to kind of blend your like affinity for art and also being a phenomenal plastic surgeon? How have you married them to really put a program together? Because I find it absolutely fascinating.
You know, it really took a lifetime following this vision. And the a deciding factor that came early in my life was, where do you go in college? You follow the pathway of art, do you follow the pathway of medicine? So art was always put as a second priority by the guidance of my father. And I wanted to find a profession where I could integrate art with science. So I was more adept towards going towards something where I could work with my hands,
yeah,
but also entertain that creative aspect. And that creative fire and energy that I want to have. And so I carried this vision on my shoulders for years.
Yeah.
And it started to evolve, but it didn't have its place in time until I got to the point where it became integrated in my work naturally.
I see.
And so I had to go through the rigors of training, doing art on the side. And then when I finally got into practice, I said, you know, there is a strong artistic component to the work that we do in restoring lives. And it went from the reconstructive component to the aging component to the rejuvenative component. And it just seemed to all come together. It also took time too. It requires walking that path, the struggles, the ups and downs. Art is not easy. There's an inherent talent, I believe, that many of us have.
Yeah.
But you have to nurture that. It has to grow, just like our work as surgeons.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I know that, because I had the pleasure of taking the class, and one of the things that I know that you really stress and really believe is that in plastic surgery training, the study of art should be something that's probably placed in there somewhere so that as plastic surgeons, we're really seeing the patient in an artistic way. What I want you to describe for me is how do you think becoming a better seer of art and becoming a better artist is going to actually make you a better surgeon and eventually make your outcomes even better for the patient?
You know, it's a very profound question because it takes you to a completely different level. When we work with patients, and this is what art is, in a sense, spiritual. It's very emotional. And we react to art. And when you integrate that into your practice, I think it creates a fiber for what you build off of.
Yeah.
It's a foundation. And if you understand shape and form and detail, that becomes part of your focal point when you're a physician. You know, we're so inundated by technology and technique, but you got to see how that plays into a personal life and personal appearance. And there's nothing that connects you more with your patient and the visionary than artistic training. And I'm talking a discipline of really understanding line, shape, form, and then how that's unique to the individual patient.
Well, one of the things I know I heard you say that I really loved was that there's an inherent feeling that you as a person know what beautiful is.
Yes.
So if you're walking into the Louvre or you're seeing a beautiful model, there's a certain, I guess, inherent feeling that we all have that we can spot it and go, I don't know why, but that thing is definitely beautiful.
Right. Yeah, and I definitely feel that we are wired, biologically wired towards these I guess, virtues of beauty.
Yeah.
It's difficult to explain. A lot has to do with your exposure during your developmental years.
Yeah.
Some of it comes inherently, but there's a common thread about something that's beautiful, whether it's a color, a shape, a form, a reaction, lighting, that we have and we can understand and appreciate.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to put your hands around, but it can come through a sense of all your senses. You integrate your senses when it comes to art, smell, taste, vision, you know, music. So there's multiple components to it, but it's external.
Yeah.
This stimulus comes externally, we react to it, and we have some storage for, like I'm saying, we have some internal wiring, but it is a common thread that we all have. I don't know if it's something genetic, or if it's something that's trained within us as we go along in our lives, But specifically when you come to a patient and we talk about this, there's a blink response, a reaction, immediate reaction to something that is pleasant. We seem to know that, and we know how to communicate on that level and experience emotional on that level.
Talk to me about the term perceptual adaptation.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean?
It's a kind of a new term for individuals in their own personal self-image and how they feel about themselves or how they find themselves, their appearances attractive. So attraction comes through repetitive exposures or experiences, which are very short but consistent. So it's a familiarity with something that's out there that's beautiful. It's a little different from your environmental, cultural, social experiences. And it's a big component now of how people are evaluating themselves as being attracted to what's being passed by them in social media.
Right. So, you know, the whole body dysmorphic problem that's being enhanced by Snapchat and all these filters that everyone can put on their phones, I see that perceptual adaptation as being this new catchphrase for people to really have a feeling about what they see as being beautiful and what can actually be achieved by a plastic surgeon or someone that's actually going to do their surgery. Because I know one of the things that happens in my practice is that patients will come in all the time and they show me how they want themselves to look, because instead of like bringing in a picture of a model that they would have done years ago, they now bring in a picture of themselves, but it's all doctored up on their phone. And many times it's very obscure. It's very something that shouldn't be done, let alone can it be done surgically. So I do think it's something that, again, your course and teaching plastic surgeons in what's really supposed to be done as a real anatomical structure is important. Because, Peter, one of the things that I love about your class and I was so excited about was that it's like becoming a jazz musician.
Mm-hmm.
Because in a way, you got to learn the real structure of music and then you can go off on your own tangents and play jazz.
Yep.
So what you're teaching is what Leonardo da Vinci and Michelangelo and those people also saw as being what's really beautiful about the human body. And then if you want to take it off on a tangent and go do something, I guess you can, based on, you know, if you want to do that for that patient or if you want to make their butt larger than it actually should be. But you can explain to the patient the way it's supposed to be and then like go off and do like your own little jazz riff in a sense.
Yeah. You know, those are really, really important, I think, insightful comments and thoughts. This perceptual adaption, it's fleeting.
Yeah.
And I do think it can become dangerous. And as we talk about a dysmorphia, it's almost as if we're brainwashed by these images.
Yeah.
And images that we create for ourselves, and they are dangerous in the fact that they can be extremely unrealistic. And continue to change as we age. We continue to mature, or as we call it, pruning back of our brain and memories and in our ideas about life. There can be some danger to that because it starts estranging itself or taking a direction away from, and I'm seeing it now, away from what is beautiful. And what's important is the integrity. More than anything, the integrity as a plastic surgeon and our conviction to do no harm.
Correct.
But to also respect human nature. And if we don't know what the norm is and what natural beauty is, and natural beauty for each of our patients and to themselves, this can get off to a tangent. And it is really our responsibility as physicians and leaders to look out for the best interests of our patients.
It's true. And as a simple example for everyone that's listening, you know yourself, when you look in the mirror and see your lips, some girls come into the practice and they want their upper lip and their lower lip to be exactly the same size. But we know anatomically that the upper lip's supposed to be about one-third and the bottom lip's supposed to be about two-thirds.
Yes.
But you still have, when I'm, you know, injecting a patient and giving them a lip augmentation, I will ask them how they want it to be. I'll explain to them the way it's supposed to be.
Yes.
But they may want it, like they want their upper lip larger than their lower lip for whatever reason. That may be their aesthetic value. And I always like to make sure that I'm bringing to the table, though, what it's supposed to be.
Yes.
Based on anatomic and structural type things. And I think that can go for everything we do in plastic surgery.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, and I think looking out for the best aesthetic interest of the patient is very important. And a patient that I think listens to this advice, it's very important. I think it's extremely important because we never want to have what's going on now, this sense of filler regret.
Yeah.
And we as physicians, we have to take, I say, a responsible role to direct patients and our individuals and patients to what we think is appropriate.
Well, I have to ask you a question about this because this is another popular thing that I know is happening in a lot of plastic surgeons' offices, the transgender population of people that are coming in. That's going to raise a lot of different questions too.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think what's important in our training is we do understand dichotomy, the difference between genders.
Yeah.
What's considered beautiful or aesthetic as a norm for that gender, but also there needs to be some counseling there so that our patients are realistic about what we're trying to achieve. And once you step over that boundary, is there a way to turn that back or reverse that? And it's very important. I mean, it's a critical decision you have to make with that patient, and it has to be commensurate, but it also has to be, respectful, but also, this big gap.
That's what I was going to say, though, but that's part of understanding the basic foundation of what a male jaw versus a female's jaw or a chin, and understanding what the female versus the male look should be, because I definitely think that in the patients I've treated that are transgender, I was able to really get the look they were going for because I did understand what we had to do about broadening their chin or their jawline and make them look the way they wanted to go.
And, you know, that says a lot about you,
Steve.
Very nice. It says quite a bit because it talks about your sensitivity to your patient.
Nice.
It talks about a high level of communication and a high level understanding.
Yeah.
And knowing you personally, you have an enduring heart.
That's very nice of you to say. I got to ask you another question.
Okay.
One statement that you made, I think, is actually beautiful, but I want you to explain it. I heard you say, sit next to an artist and tell me how you see things through your eyes. Explain that to me and to everyone that's listening, because I honestly believe at the heart and soul of everything we're talking about, that's really at the crux of what you're trying to teach.
Right. You know, that's a true risk, but an openness of mind.
That's
nice. And we have comfort zones of where we are, and we talk about who we are is what we've been exposed to. But true openness is taking that journey through someone else's path. And trying to see through their eyes to better improve your life.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a learning process about yourself. And we learn our own limitations. We learn our own inhibitions. We kind of learn a bit about our perspective, but we also learn about our own judgment, which sometimes it's a critical judgment that needs to be opened up.
I understand that. I'm hoping that everybody that's been listening has like really enjoyed it as much as I have. My guest today was Dr. Peter Schmid, You've been listening to The Plastic Surgery Revolution. I'm your host, Dr. Stephen Davis. I'm not sure we'll be able to duplicate this unbelievable, spiritual, and wonderful talking points again, but thank you so much, Peter, for joining us, and I'll be speaking with everyone else out there next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Plastic Surgery Revolution with Dr. Stephen Davis. Please subscribe to our show in iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or whatever app you use to listen to podcasts. Keep listening, looking great, and feeling better.